Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
So many sports are in full swing right now, so there's no better time to get into sports betting than this very second. Go to Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts. And hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of the Believe in Clippers podcast right here on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jesse Cass, and really excited to have you here for what is a fantastic episode coming up. We've got a great special guest, Charles Smith, former 9-year NBA veteran. He began his career with the Clippers, had some outstanding seasons, even making a little bit of a playoff run in the early 90s before spending some time on those great 1990s New York Knicks teams. Charles is here to talk about his time with the Clippers and break down, of course, the current year's edition of the Clippers and everything to do with this year's ball club. So some really good stuff coming up with Charles. Before we get there, I want to let you know, if you enjoy the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, and we're available wherever you get your podcasts. Clippers are rolling right now. They're 17-3 in their last 20 games. Played an ugly one against the Houston Rockets after a long stretch of games where, you know, maybe a little bit of fatigue setting in, but a game the Clippers were able to hang on to and win. So sometimes you have to win ugly. We've seen a lot of pretty wins and fun wins despite being shorthanded. While the health isn't quite there for the Clippers yet, the level of play has been really high, and the schedule in terms of some days off really starts to ease up for the Clippers. So we'll see if they can take advantage of that health-wise. But right now, it reflected in the record, they're winning and winning a lot of basketball games right on the heels of Phoenix for that two spot, and they play Phoenix again this upcoming week. So a lot of exciting stuff going on with Clippers basketball, with Paul George continuing to be dominant. So that, we talk about everything with that in between the Clippers and their championship hopes with Charles Smith. So without further ado, here he is, Charles Smith, on the Believe in Clippers podcast, right here on the Believe Podcast Network. Ryan, we're now joined on the Believe in Clippers podcast by our guest, former 9-year NBA veteran, Charles Smith. Charles, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here. This is definitely one of the shows that I wanted to be on because I haven't talked Clipper basketball in a very long time.
Yeah, and of course, you entered the league as a Clipper back in the 1988-89 season, you know, came into the league with a bang. That's kind of, yeah, the first place I wanted to start. Obviously, the organization back then was much different than it is now. You did get a taste of the playoffs with the Clippers in your time there, but just how much have you seen this organization change from when you came into the league to what they are now?
Wow, well, you know what? It's two different organizations. You almost can't even compare them. Other than the fact that they're in the same city. But, I mean, from top to bottom, management, ownership, fan base, crowd, arena. I mean, it's just two different programs. It's hard to even compare.
Yeah. And what was it like for you playing in your time? So you mentioned that you guys did have some success getting into that playoff series in the early 90s and, you know, had some very good players in your team, but what was that like, you know, coming into the league and playing with the Clippers?
Well, you know what, coming into the league and playing for the Clippers was tough because, you know, it was such a losing organization. But to scrap and fight and management begin to turn things around the best way that they could, it was a very, I mean, it's a moment that I'll never forget in my life, making the playoffs for the first time in 17 years when I was there. And that's number 17. I never forgot that. That shows how much of an impact it was because we tried year after year. And I think that was the team with Doc Rivers and Ron Harper, K came to the club, and we finally made the playoffs. And we made the playoffs against Utah.
Yeah.
And it was during the time of the riots. We had Utah, and we were up by a significant amount, I remember, at halftime in game five. Because then, you know, you had the first series that were five games.
Yeah.
And we had them by a significant amount at halftime in the third period. I remember Ron Harper cursing one of the refs out, and it just went downhill for a course right then. And then they beat us in the fifth game. But it was an exciting series, and that was the turnaround for management, for the fan base. It was a great time. It was a great moment in my sports life.
Yeah, and obviously now we know that the expectations, you said, basically two different programs, as you said now, but, you know, a very disappointing end to their postseason last year. What have you seen from this year's edition of the team and how much you've been able to catch up with them? Obviously, they're hot right now. They've won 17 out of their last 20 games. What have you seen from them recently?
Well, you know, I'll digress for one quick second and talk about the years with Doc.
Yeah.
You know, I played with Doc in San Antonio, LA, and New York.
Yeah.
So we were teammates there. And I knew once the Clippers got Doc that he was going to be able to turn that program around because of how he was as a teammate. He was always very knowledgeable. He always knew how to deal with the press, and he was always a great teammate. So, and he had already won a championship with the Celtics. So he had everything going. So I got a chance to watch that. And then the team now, you know, with the players that they have, and they got, you know, Tyronn Lue now, who was a former player. So they got the right chemistry. They got a really good ball club. They got good leadership. Paul George has been on a tear. Everyone knows he's always been a great player. So they got a good nucleus. And, you know, there's always going to be change in all programs. Things don't normally stay the same anyway. But the changes that were made at the ball club were very significant. They were tough decisions, and it's working out for them. So it's great that they're in a position that they're in. It's awesome to see them play.
Yeah, no, that was obviously a difficult and tough decision for the Clippers this past offseason. Because like you said, Doc Rivers, not only so influential as a coach, but as a person for this organization, you know, he guided them through so much through, you know, when the Donald Sterling stuff broke out, and he was kind of the guiding force behind that. So I think, you know, everyone in Clipper fandom and nation is very appreciative of Doc Rivers. But, you know, maybe do you think there's a time for a coach where sometimes for maybe both parties, it's just time to, you know, make a change? Because Doc's obviously doing very well in Philadelphia now and in his new role there.
Well, you know what? It was tough. You know, the key is today is, you know, and it's unfortunate. I think most head coaches have to be more experienced and have the more emotional capital to make the right connections with his players. It's very important for a head coach to have the proper effective communication with the players, and the players have to be very comfortable with the head coach. The X's and O's, it's great if a head coach has it, but it's more important on the assistant side now to contribute in that area. It's a different time. It's a different era. Unfortunately, money makes you smart. So the player with the biggest contract is the captain. It's been like that for a while, but even more prevalent now. So the top players and the coach, they have to have a strong relationship. There's got to be a bond there, yeah, or it's not going to work. And that's across the league. It's unfortunate, but that's where the game is.
Yeah. And I'm curious, just because you obviously played on some really great teams with with the Knicks in the early 90s, had deep playoff runs and, you know, some really tough, heartbreaking finishes. I'm curious, how did you guys respond year after year? You know, the Clippers coming off their really tough playoffs last year, to bounce back and get in that mindset to start the next year fresh and be able to come back strong.
You know, it's the leadership that makes that happen. One, you have to have a good coaching staff that's respected that can drive that, but also you have to have the right leadership with the team. I felt with the Knicks, we had some really great leaders, not just one, not just two, we had a few. We had, and few with experience as well. You had, for the Knicks, we had Rolando Blackman, we had Derek Harper, we had Doc Rivers. You know, Patrick obviously was a great leader and led by example. Oak has been in the playoffs. So we had a lot of guys who've been in the playoffs. So that made it more, it made it easier because you didn't have to push us as much. We knew all we had to do is know what the game plan was and go execute. And we wanted it better. So for players to bounce back, you know, you don't get that chance to go to the finals, even the conference finals, is not that easy. And it doesn't come year after year. Not everybody can create a dynasty. However, the fact that you have leadership on the team that's respected, and that leader on the team has got to be a vocal leader as well to pull the troops and get them to understand what we need to do, get them to understand that person as a leader, what they're projecting and why they need to do it, and get everybody to buy in. He's an extension of the coach. When you have that, teams will bounce back.
Yeah, and you know, for the Clippers, it's interesting because they obviously have a couple of guys who are great at leading by example, and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. We know that was a talk of, or a point of discussion, is the leadership of this team. You know, they went out and made the move for Rajon Rondo at the trade deadline. How much do you think that helps with their leadership, and who do you see as kind of the leaders on this year's edition of the Clippers?
Well, you know, it's always going to be the guys who've gone into the playoffs and won. But here's the issue, Jess. You can lead by example, but that's not good enough. If you are the guy on the team and you're only leading by example, it's not going to be enough because you might say things that you don't realize is disruptive and can cause conflict within the team, and nobody will say nothing about it because you're the top guy on the team leading by example. So you have to have verbal skills. You have to have the ability to have that effective communication. I'll say it over and over again, because it's like this. When you think about this, when you don't have hard conversations with someone, you're destined for a negative impact, right? Yeah. So if that leader on the team doesn't lead verbally, and he's not having the hard conversations with the players, you're both left to think negative thoughts over a period of time. But if you have the hard conversation, you have to give yourself an opportunity for a positive impact. So without having those communications, it could be the difference between wins and losses or key plays in the game. So having Rajon Rondo as a leader, who I've seen him develop and grow from his experience with Dallas, what he's done with LA, with the Lakers.
Yeah.
Now he's in position to be more of a verbal leader as well as lead by example. So they needed someone like him and others.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one moment this season that really stood out to me that kind of sparked this great stretch of basketball that we've seen over the past month and a half was a game against Atlanta in the past homestand. Clippers were down 22, not really playing with the right effort that they needed. And, you know, Tyronn Lue pulled out the entire starting lineup, brought the bench in. Those guys played hard and they ended up coming back and winning that game. And you're talking about those, you know, big moments, tough accountability moments. It seemed like that was one of them. And that kind of gave the team a jolt, and they've kind of haven't looked back since.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly you can't take off any plays.
Yeah.
And you see that happen. You see a player here or a player there not giving maximum effort at certain points in the game. Star players can get away with doing that because they can do something phenomenal on one end of the floor, defense or offensive end, and propel the team. But when you have a few guys each night and they're taking off plays, you know, like the Atlanta game, that tends to be contagious and they don't play hard, but throwing the bench in and they're hungry and they want to prove themselves. If you look at that game, they're not taking off any plays. They're going that extra effort for the steal. They're going that extra effort for to keep the offensive guy in front of them or to get that block or their rebound. They're going the extra effort because, one, they're hungry. They want to prove themselves, and they wanted it. And, yes, when you got a bench like that, that comes in and they get their confidence that they can do it, and the coach knows they can do it, and they did it, that tells the starters and everybody else, hey, we got to step it up. Because in the game of basketball, it's a short-lived career, and somebody's always coming after your minutes.
No question. And it's funny. I feel like, you know, that game in particular, like we say, kind of propelled things, but it's allowed, I think, like you mentioned, the confidence to grow for some of these guys, where we've seen around the league, especially, but for the Clippers, injuries kind of pile up. So even when they've had one or two or three guys out of the lineup, we've seen other guys step up and really be able to contribute and help them win some games that, you know, they probably didn't have any business winning.
Right, right. Yeah, that that always infuses some positive energy in the team and kind of tightens them up, which is good. And it bonds the team as well, because, you know, when you go a whole season and you're playing eight guys, nine guys, and that 10 through 15 never play at all, they become forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, I always say that the winning teams respect the 14th and 15th man just as much as they respect the first and second guy on the team. And when you look at all the championship ball clubs, that's what happened. They became a bond and everybody was respected. And somehow along the way, be it through play, be it through a leader that pulls that 15th guy into the mix. You know, a lot of teams, the 15th guy never goes to breakfast, lunch, or dinner with the starters. They're just forgotten. They do their own thing. But the real true leaders on teams that pull everybody together grabs those guys at the end of the bench and makes them a part of the team and gives them the voice and the respect that they deserve as well.
Yeah, that's something that I think has been really noticeable this season. You know, it of course happened at times last year. They still had a great overall year last year before the, the playoffs. But I think you can really tell the chemistry, I think, has taken a step forward with things like you mentioned. You know, you can see on the bench the veterans talking to the young guys, player number one through player, you know, 15, even guys coming in on 10-day contracts, seeming like they're part of the group right away. So I think on that point, it seems like from that end of things, the Clippers have had a good year with their chemistry.
Yeah, it is chemistry and culture. When you go deep into the playoffs, it's the chemistry and culture that will prevail. You know, and it every single championship team, what do they say? 1 through 15, we were a team. Everybody contributed. Yeah. We pulled everybody in. So along the way, and I think, you know, look, I played for Larry Brown, Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, and these were all great leaders. And I can't, you know, exclude even back in the day, Gene Shue, Mike Shuler, and Don Nelson. But these guys were all leaders, and they were winners, but they all had a different element. And what I just said about pulling the whole team together, I think Greg Popovich and Pat Riley were the best at. I've seen them do things to pull the team together and create a winning culture for a team to feel bonded to go out and win every night, and they knew they had a chance to win.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't think anyone would argue with you there in terms of those guys and some of the best coaches of all time and their ability to connect like that. What was that like for you to play with those guys during that time and to see, you know, both of them go forward and continue to keep winning and coaching? Obviously, Riley now as an executive and Greg Popovich continuing to do it as a coach.
Well, they're different. Those two gentlemen, they both want to win, but they're different in style.
Yeah.
You know, I would say Pat Riley is more, give you an example. If you took the starters and Pat Riley and Greg Popovich said, hey, guys, look out that window and tell me what you see. And they report and they're standing there and they talk to Pat Riley and say, this is what they saw. Pat Riley might say, you didn't see this? Oh, come on, guys. This is what it is, and this is how it is, where Greg Popovich would say, you know what? I like what you guys see. I see this too. Let's try to combine it and make it work.
Yeah.
So one more of a kind of a dictator style, and the other one kind of is a participative style, grabs all information and uses it. So both winning in their own right, but definitely different styles.
We've all had our bad experiences with sunglasses, some that don't fit well, some that break easily. It's time to make your outdoor experiences better with Kanen. Kanen sunglasses are made exclusively with polarized lenses for optimal clarity. They're made with Japanese optics that make their lenses clearer, lighter, and stronger, and Italian handcrafted frames that are impossible to scratch. Use the exclusive code KanenCast15 at Kanen.com to receive 15% off your first pair. That's KAENONCAST15. Kanen, clearly better. You mentioned earlier that Paul George has been on a tear lately, throwing up multiple 30-point games and really kind of hitting his stride after struggling with that toe injury for a little bit. But what have you seen from him this year in general that has allowed him to be so successful? We know he's such a talented player, but it seems like he's really in a groove and playing some of his best basketball in his career.
You know, not knowing Paul George, never having a conversation with him, and just observing his play, he seems more focused. And sometimes a star or a superstar player needs a little motivation and needs it, you know, for his own self. And I think because he didn't have a great playoff last year, and he's on the team now, he has his contract, he's motivated internally to prove to himself, more so than others, that he deserves to be in the conversation with the top guys in the league. And in order for him to do that, he's doing what he needs to do right now, carry it into the playoffs and push the Clippers as far as they can go to the conference finals, maybe to the finals overall. That's what he needs to do. And he's got motivation for it. He's got motivation. He's got focus. I know he got married, and that can settle a guy down, not to hang out as much. You still got to punch your club card in with your teammates and do things with them. But, you know, you kind of get settled in. He's old enough now. He's mature enough. He's focused. I love watching him play. And he is playing his best basketball. And I wish him the best. I want the Clippers to get to the finals because it'd be great. It would be great for the city, the ball club. And then it justifies the changes that they made, the gut-wrenching, hard changes that they made. They'll become justified.
Yeah. And, you know, the Western Conference, I mean, historically has always been really tough in terms of the playoff race. You know, the Clippers right now are right in that mix for, you know, they're in the 3 spot right now. They could move up to 2 or 1, right. But regardless, where do you see them in the Western Conference playoff picture? We know the Lakers, you know, when they're healthy, of course, are the defending champs, but, you know, what do you see as far as their chances going forward of getting to that Western Conference finals, or, you know, the finals, if they can get that far?
Well, here's the key that I see. This is my personal opinion with the Clippers.
Yeah.
They're not going to get to the finals unless their culture, their communication, and their bond within the ball club. I'm not even talking about Tyronn Lue as a coach. Unless those top guys are gelled and clicking, it's like a marriage. It's like communication with your spouse. You got to be on point with each other. You got to know each other. Because at that time when you got to make that extra effort, you're not doing it for yourself. You're doing it for the team as well. You don't have a split second to think about it. So they need to bond. They need to be closer. They need to know who's going to take that shot and win. And the other guy's got to be comfortable with it and support and still go board and do the things, not see a guy take the shot and the other person just like, oh, and not do anything. Have confidence in that guy when he takes that shot and then go immediately go to rebound and support him and what's going to happen. They just have to be a tighter knit bond. They got the talent, but they're going to have to be a tighter knit bond to go to the finals.
Yeah. And I think one thing that, you know, maybe overlooked from last year's playoff run, which of course we know is disappointing, but, you know, that was the first year together for this group. And sure, obviously that could be something where, you know, talking about that familiarity and that bond where you don't really know the tendencies of the guy next to you. And this year, obviously having at least one more year under your belt, maybe that's something that, you know, they have a better experience with going forward for this year's playoffs.
Right. And they're going to need that. But I would say just the fact that they have the time together, you got to go deeper. You got to have significant quality time together to talk about their differences, to have those conversations about who's going to do what. I mean, we did that with the Knicks when we went to the finals. We know who was going to do what at which time, you know. Look, I went from scoring 20 points a game with the Clippers to going to New York, taking the ball out of my hand, not being able to dribble it, and, you know, and being a third wheel and sometimes a fourth wheel and getting my shots and scoring on my own. That takes sacrifice, but you got to accept it. So they have to accept their roles. They have to understand the goal is to win it all. And you're going to have to make those sacrifices for your players and your teammates to do that.
Yeah, and obviously the playoffs are a different game than the regular season, but at least so far, I think, you know, we've seen that extra pass, that trust, you know, guys being able to hit big shots and know their roles, like we said. And we've even heard Marcus Morris talk about, you know, everyone on this team knows their defined role. They're happy in it. They're starring in it. So, you know, if those things can continue, that should bode well for the playoffs. But, you know, that, of course, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, and it will. It will do well in the playoffs. They just have to keep, you know, priming that pump. They just have to keep, you know, doing what they're doing and get greater at it. And, you know, just another way to explain it is, let's say the Clippers they play a game and 80% of their game on how they play together is on point, 80% of it. Yeah. Well, that 20%, they need to live in that margin of error, because if you can move the needle in that 20% range, you've just propelled the organization, the ball club ahead a lot further. And if you can, you know, really move in that 20%, and that's what they need to do.
Yeah. And I think, again, that goes to the point of what we talked about with leadership and maybe just a little bit more kind of directional playmaking with Rajon Rondo, like we said, of someone who's been through it, who's won in multiple circumstances where, you know, in those moments of adversity, someone who can kind of calm things down and direct traffic, if you would, and help the team in that way.
Right. And if they can trust Rondo and he's, you know, giving them the right leadership through example, by example and verbally, then they can do it. I mean, you know, I use the term effective communication. That's what I do in corporate. And I see how companies increase their bottom line by effective communication. In sports, that could be the difference between wins and losses. You know, Harvard Business Review did this study where 73% of employees don't trust their boss. If the team doesn't trust Rondo as a leader, or Paul George, or Kawhi, they don't trust him as a leader, the rest of the team, you got a problem. You got to diagnose and you got to figure that out, because once that's the bond we're talking about, once that connection is made, sky's the limit. Everybody's play, confidence just goes, you know, leaps and bounds, it just grows.
Yeah, and like we said, we've seen a lot of people step up despite all the injuries for the Clippers. When they are at full strength and when the playoffs begin, that's going to be a tough decision or tough decisions for Tyronn Lue in terms of the rotation that you have going forward in the playoffs. For guys that have been playing all year, who do you see kind of making this rotation? We've seen, mentioned Rondo, of course, Reggie Jackson has played really well. Patrick Beverley will come back and he's normally the starting point guard. You know, you have Zubats playing starting center effectively well and Serge Ibaka coming back. So there's a lot of decisions there for Tyronn Lue. Who do you see kind of being the core rotation in the playoffs?
You know, other than, you know, Paul, Kawhi, and, you know, maybe Serge, you know, it's about chemistry going into the playoffs. And so Tyronn Lue will look at all the film and his staff will look at all the film. They'll look at games during the season. And it's a chemistry decision more so than a player decision. Because again, look at what we're talking about, that bond. It really comes down to which 6, 7, 8 guys mesh together and maximize the plays and understands what to do out there on the floor. So players can be interchangeable. You know, you can, during the season, you can move guys in and out because of injuries, this and that, but it's chemistry going into the playoffs. So you got your main guys. Those other guys are going to be the puzzle pieces for that chemistry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, as we said, I think it's going to be a really exciting finish for the Clippers, and we'll see if they can get it together this year. Before we let you go, obviously, we know that, you know, fans are starting to come back into the arenas. You know, that is something obviously different that no one has dealt with, you know, in your time up to now. But what do you think it's been like for these players to play in these empty arenas or arenas now with a couple thousand fans and kind of adjust their game with, you know, different circumstances around them in the world?
Well, you know, I said this early on when it first started, that the level of play will not go down. And it won't go down because as a professional athlete, you've been trained to compete against that guy across, against that team you're going against. You know, they talk about the fans being the sixth man. Well, there's still five guys on the floor that got to compete. It's great to have that sixth man in the fans, but if you don't have them, you're still competing. That's why when you look at the season without a lot of fans in there, the play did not go down. Guys are still competing. You're seeing all the, you know, miraculous plays by different players throughout the league. You see teams getting better even during this time, like Charlotte. So the play and the competitive nature of the players is not going to change. When the fans come back in, what's going to change is the enthusiasm in the arena and the enthusiasm with the players playing, because they're, again, the sixth man is back. So there's the energy of the crowd. There's the celebration after you hit that next play that energizes you to play defense and do something else. All of those things are emotional and they come back into the arenas. But as far as the guys, they've been playing tremendous, and I've loved watching all the NBA games.
Yeah, and it's funny, to that point, you know, I was listening to an interview with Julius Randle of the Knicks the other day, and they were asking him about the fans, and he was saying that, you know, the 2000 Madison Square Garden sounded like a packed house to him. So I can imagine that, like you said, it's the players on the floor, but especially as we go towards the playoffs, there could be games where that energy and enthusiasm, you know, for the Clippers in their arena could help them, you know, maybe have that little extra drive to come out with a tough game.
Yeah. I mean, and what Julius Randle said, so I went back to back when the Knicks beat Toronto and the LA Lakers. And right, there were 2000 whatever in the arena, and they were loud. You know, you could hear them on the floor, not as loud as maybe he said a packed house, because I know what that really sounds like.
Yeah, but you've got firsthand experience.
He can still hear them when they're chanting his name and saying MVP and all that stuff. It energizes you. It picks you up. And that's what's happening. And that's what happened. So he's right in that aspect. And, you know, the league needs the fans. They need them back in the arena. The fans need the team. That's their connection. That's their outlet. So once the fans start to flood the arenas again and we get back to that, we're going to see that energy level and that sound level and everybody kind of the fans getting off the players' play and the players getting off of the fans' noise, and it's going to be magical again.
Well, we're looking forward to that. Obviously, fans, Clippers just had their first game with fans the other day, and will have, you know, in limited capacity for the rest of the season as well. So hopefully that helps them going forward. Charles, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate the time and all the insight about the Clippers and the NBA in general, and appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, man, I'm happy to be here, having been a part of Clipper Nation in a long time. Clipper fans, love you guys. And thanks just for having me on.
Huge thank you once again to Charles Smith for taking the time to come on the show. And a big thanks to you out there listening as well for tuning us in here on the Bleav Podcast Network. Know if you enjoy the show, as we said at the top, you can rate, review, and subscribe. We're available wherever you find your podcasts and, of course, at Bleav.com. With all of that said, Clippers, as we mentioned, rolling along right now. They are 43-19 winners of their last four. And as we said, 17 of their last 20. They hit that 40 before 20 marker, and are just a half game behind Phoenix for the 2 seed, and 2.5 back still of the 1 seed. So everything's still in play for the Clippers, who, of course, will hope to get healthy. We know, of course, Patrick Beverley still with some more extended time coming back from that hand fracture. Kawhi Leonard, we'll see if he can get back into the fold. They kind of shut him down for about a week to make sure that foot soreness doesn't develop into anything further, but doesn't seem too serious. The more of a precautionary measure there. But, of course, everyone back at some point would be nice for the Clippers. Serge Ibaka played some 4-on-4, so he's finally progressing from the back injury, and we'll see what the Clippers will ultimately look like at full strength. There'll be a lot of decisions, as we mentioned in that talk with Charles, for Tyronn Lue, especially going into that playoff rotation. But so far, so good. Clippers playing some of the best basketball of the year, and right in the mix for those 2 or even 1 seeds in the West Coast Conference. So that'll do it for this week's edition of the Bleav in Clippers podcast. Again, a big thanks to Charles Smith for coming on the show, and thanks to you for coming on and listening to us here on the Bleav Podcast Network, LA's number one sports podcast network, and the only place to show for every team in LA and more. We believe in our LA teams. Do you believe? Go Clips.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.